Big Oil Check-In, exploring the end of the age of oil.
Flights in Europe and over the Northern Atlantic have started again, nearly a week after planes were grounded to prevent damage from volcanic ash. And the airlines want taxpayers to funnel them more money. You and I already pay to subsidize air travelers. Airlines are exempt from paying fuel taxes, for example, while ground transport pays hefty taxes on diesel and gasoline. After September 11, 2001, the U.S. government funneled billions to the airlines. Now, the industry wants more. The New York Times reports that Giovanni Bassignani, the chief executive of the International Association of Air Transport, the IATA, has said, quote, "I am the first to say that this industry does not want or need bailouts," unquote. Okay, so far so good. But then he contradicts himself. Quote, "But this crisis is not the result of running our business badly. It is an extraordinary situation exaggerated with a poor decision-making process by national governments," unquote. Did national governments do a poor job of deciding when to close the skies? The IATA has charged that governments have made decisions without clear risk assessment. That seems to be true. There's too little information about the effects of ash on airplanes to make accurate risk assessment. So the governments have relied on the precautionary principle: better safe than sorry. They would rather have more flights canceled and more people delayed than risk airplanes falling out of the sky. As for Bisignani's comment that the eruption of Eyjafjallajökull is, quote, "an extraordinary situation," unquote, sure, it is. Okay, I gotta admit that I was a bit shy about pronouncing Eyjafjallajökull on the air, but I don't want to talk several minutes about the volcano without at least trying. Anyway, extraordinary situations are what industries get insurance for. What I want to know is why people who don't fly, or who fly less than average, should give even more money to the airlines to subsidize their stockholders, their highly paid executives, and people rich enough to afford to fly frequently. Now, I understand there were probably some really important things that got delayed while the flights were grounded. Organ transplant operations that didn't happen as scheduled, for example. But really, how important is air travel to our society for the most part? Here in Vermont, British schoolboys were stranded at a ski resort in Killington. How much would the world suffer if fewer British teenagers could spend 5 days on the ski slopes of Vermont? Or fewer Europeans visit SeaWorld or Disney World? And few people from North America spend April in Paris? These are luxuries, not necessities. In Europe, some supermarkets were reporting shortages of fresh-cut flowers and tropical fruits like mangoes. Again, nothing they couldn't live without. On the other hand, for the Kenyan cut flower industry and the countries counting on air shipping fruit to Europe, the end of air transport was surely a significant blow. That shows the fragility of building up an industry around just-in-time marketing. The Swedish radio program Good Morning World interviewed a Stockholm professor who specializes in risk assessment about the most important services in our vulnerable technological society. Sven-Uwe Hansson compiled a top 10 list of services that would cause difficulty if they were to go down for a week. Not surprisingly, air travel wasn't on that list. From a peak oil perspective, I was interested to see that the drop in demand for jet fuel in Europe was credited with putting downward pressure on world oil prices. Oil fell several dollars a day on some of the days flights were grounded. European jet fuel demand is a fraction of 1% of worldwide oil consumption, yet when it ended, financial analysts said prices responded. When oil prices spiked in 2007 and 2008, many people said, "Demand isn't up very much, so surely supply and demand can't be responsible for these high prices. It must be speculators." When oil supply and demand are in such a close balance as they are right now, it doesn't take much drop in demand to get prices to drop noticeably. Similarly, a relatively small uptick in demand can cause big jumps in prices. Forecasters across a wide range of institutions expect another price spike in the next 1 to 3 years. When that happens, we'll probably get some more people yelling, "Speculators!" I have just one word to say in reply. Eyjafjallajökull. And I expect that they won't tell me, that's easy for you to say. I'm Carl Etnayer, and that's this week's Peak Oil Check-In.
Peak Oil Check-In was produced by Relocalizing Vermont Productions in association with WGDR Plainfield.